Hey everyone, welcome to episode number 10 of Robot Radio. This is Greg Stanwood along with Andrew Martin. 2 weeks into the season now, and we've just gotten off a couple of rather disappointing and embarrassing losses to the Mets and Braves, so I'm sure everyone's a little bit down right now. But, you know, we're already off to an awkward start. Say something.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know when you wanted me to pipe in. No, it's been a disappointing start, but it really could be a lot worse right now. I mean, we're at 500, which if we can get out of April 500, we have a good, because we're a good second half team. Everyone knows we're a good second half team, and once things get rolling, we're a team that can rattle off a 10-game winning streak at any point in time, and that's what the rest of the National League has to worry about for us. Like we always say around, you know, my circle, is that if the Rockies can make it out of April at 500, we're in good shape.
Right.
And our Pythagorean is a 6-4, which doesn't necessarily mean anything, and this is where you kind of, people start to cite, you know, hitting with runners in scoring position and stuff like that, and the big innings and things like that, but, you know, when we're scoring a good amount of runs and we're allowing a fair amount of runs, and like I said, a Pythagorean 6-4 and we're at 5-5, it just says we're doing some things right and just little things aren't coming together quite yet, and it's the kind of stuff that balances out over the course of a season.
Here's something I can ask. I understand what the Pythagorean win-loss is supposed to represent, but I really don't understand how it's, it's not that I don't understand, I've never really looked it up. What causes basically what's responsible for the differences between the real record and the other one? Is it what defines a game that should have been won otherwise?
Well, you can't look at the Pythagorean win-loss so much as saying, and you can't really look at that as in the form of an individual game. The idea is if you have a positive run differential, meaning that you've scored more than you've allowed,
right,
then conceivably, you know, just that's what Pythagorean win-loss is saying, is that that should be your record. If if you scored more than you've allowed, then you should be on top. The idea is, like, if you look back 2007, the Diamondbacks were, should have been, according to, you know, the Pythagorean, somewhere around a 500 club, yet they were a 92-win team or 90-win team?
Yeah,
90-win team, I believe. The difference with that and, you know, where you are now, it has to do with how your close games come out. The idea is the Diamondbacks would win all their tight games, and then when they'd lose, they'd oftentimes lose in a blowout, but they keep winning the close games.
Yep.
So their record would say, hey, we're winning a lot of games, whereas the Pythagorean says, well, you know, you're allowing more runs, or, you know, you're allowing a pretty, you know, even number of runs and scoring an even number of runs there. So it comes down to the Rockies have the tendency to win in blowouts and lose the close games, at least in the early going. We saw a lot of this last year in the first 2 months of the season when everyone thought we were going to tank and fall down completely and have to sell off, you know, everyone or, you know, whatever, start to kind of do a one-year rebuild and play for 2010. The idea is we could not win a close game to save our lives, but when we would win, we'd destroy the other teams. I mean, we're talking, you know, 2, 3, 4 run differentials there in our wins, and then when we'd lose by one run, losing extras, things like that. And that's what'll destroy a team's record as compared to the Pythagorean. It's almost what you wish you could siphon some of those wins in the or the runs in the blowouts to the close ones, but it obviously doesn't work that way.
Yeah, kind of spread it out a little bit. I guess that's what it implies is kind of the standard assumption of how it would happen. I mean, just dividing it up kind of equally, but, you know, obviously it just doesn't work that way.
It's like my it's kind of like when my buddy was trying to explain the American election system to me, and no, I'm not trying to get into a political debate here, but I said I don't understand the Electoral College, and he said, well, you got to remember, it's a collection of smaller elections throughout the country. And I said, well, what do you mean? And he goes, well, look at it like the 2004 ALCS. Who scored more runs in that series, the Yankees or the Red Sox? I said, well, the Yankees, they had a bunch of blowouts. As who won the series? The Red Sox, because they won 4 games. So that is that they, you know, just because you got the more runs scored obviously doesn't mean you win the season, or else, well, that just wouldn't make any sense now, would it?
Nope. I guess not.
It's the kind of thing, it'll even out. It'll even out. Everyone who's having a panic attack right now, and I mean, I'm not very pleased about how the way things are going right now, because there's a lot of problems right now, but it's the kind of stuff that will iron out still. If we continue to outscore other teams at a grand scale, eventually the individual game results start to match what we're seeing on a big scale.
Plus, I mean, as just keeping things in perspective, we're obviously just coming off two disappointing games, and we are forgetting that we had, you know, three really great games in a row before
that.
Yeah,
absolutely.
We've been playing well at home. We still have six more home games this month, plus four on the road against the Nationals. If anything is encouraging to having a 500 or better record coming out of April, I think that's it. I mean, Atlanta, this Atlanta series right now is the most difficult part of the rest of the month, for sure. And then, of course, we start off May against San Francisco, so we have basically Washington and then two home series in between, which makes me feel somewhat optimistic, especially since we've already won two series at home. I don't foresee any serious collapse.
That's about right for me. We got room to make this up. We just hope that we can kind of iron out the kinks against, you know, the Padres and the Nationals and stuff like that before we really get in with the Dodgers and the Diamondbacks and the Giants.
Yeah, the Nationals aren't off to that too bad of a start in terms of the games they're winning, but I still laugh at their pitching, to be honest.
It's not much of a pitching staff. I'm not going to even try to defend them there. There are good things about the team, though. I mean, we're above middle of the pack as far as on-base percentage goes. We're slugging a bit better than average, and you can probably attribute some of that to, you know, Coors' massive gaps there. But we're batting about average right now, which isn't that bad. I mean, if April's our weak month and we're batting average, you know, we are batting at an average level as far as, you know, OPS or weighted on-base average goes. You know, we're in a good place because we're just going to build off that.
Yeah, I'm looking at the batting average right now. We're currently 11th with we're hitting .268, and which is not bad. It'll probably get much larger. But
as far as weighted on base average goes, we're actually tied for 11th as well with the Nationals at .340.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Especially since the Nationals. Let's see, where are they on this list? Yeah, they're nowhere near us in terms of batting average. They're a full 25 points lower.
Yeah, well, again, when you have a team that has guys like Adam Dunn on it, you know, you're going to have to appreciate the batting numbers in different ways and hope that, you know, produces as well as the analysts hope it will. Because the Nationals aren't a bad batting club. They got some good pieces there. It's more just the issue of can their pitching hold off while their bats try to make up. I mean, Ryan Zimmerman's not bad at all. Pudge isn't very good. Adam Dunn's good. Willingham's good. I mean, there's some good players on the team.
Certainly. I definitely was in the... I mean, I was joking when I did the whole Marquee Magic thing. You know, they're headed to the playoffs. But I really... I mean, I think it's clear that, say, the Houston Astros have kind of usurped them as the joke of the league. They have no farm system at the moment, and plus their MLB team is in dire straits.
I do not understand how Ed Wade has not lost his job yet. The guy, I mean, I don't know what he's doing. I really just don't understand what he's doing. He's made a few decent bargain basement pickups, and the only one I can come off of on the top of my head is LaTroy Hawkins last year when the Yankees cut tie with him, and then the Astros say, sure, we could use LaTroy Hawkins, and then Hawkins ended up having a pretty lights-out second half for him.
And then they decided to get Brandon Lyon instead.
I don't understand that. I mean, I can understand not, because Hawkins is probably looking for more than they are willing to offer, so he figured he'd try the market, and I mean, the Brewers didn't have it wasn't a bad pickup signing him, but, you know, I just don't see an organizational plan for the Astros, and maybe I'm just not looking hard enough at it. I'm sure they got a couple, you know, interesting guys or whatever, but with Berkman hurt, with Pence not being that impressive, at least as far as I've seen so far.
Carlos Lee has the worst metrics of anybody this season so far.
In what regard?
I was looking at wins above replacement. And,
okay.
Yeah. But I think,
well, it's a little early to be citing WAR, but I
well,
see you're getting at.
Yeah, I'm not speaking for he's going to be the worst player of the season. I'm clearly speaking he is the worst player so far.
When we look at weighted on base average, let's see, Kaz Matsui's at a 0.86, which is atrocious. Carlos Lee's at a 108, which is atrocious. Because Kaz is probably getting a bit of benefit from being a second baseman. Hunter Pence is at 113. Corey Sullivan's batting better than both of them at 144, which is not good.
Good job, Corey.
Yeah, the other side of the good players for them as far as, you know, Weighted on base average goes. Michael Bourne's doing well, 351 on base percentage, and he's at a 361 weighted on base average. All those 801 OPAs, that's pretty decent for a guy like him, being mostly a singles hitter and stolen base kind of threat. Looks like two of their pitchers are leading the team, but I'm sure they've had, you know what, two at-bats apiece or something like that.
Uh-huh.
Jeff Kepinger's actually doing pretty decently for them. He's batting 370 right now, but yeah. But as much as everybody came here to hear about the Astros, we should probably talk about our own team.
Well, being that we do cover the rest of the league, I don't think people will be too upset, but we'll see.
I really feel bad for Astros fans, because going back all the way to 2007, when they traded Jason Hirsch, Willie Taveras, and Taylor Buchholz for Jason Jennings, who played like half a season for them and was atrociously bad. We made out like bandits in that trade. Even though we ended up losing Hirsch and Taveras ended up being terrible, just that one season of production from Taveras, what good Hirsch brought to us, and then what good Buchholz brought to us the next season. He wasn't even that atrocious in 2007. It was just one of those, okay, kid, you got to kind of learn here. You're not going to shake it as a starter. Let's try you in the bullpen.
Yeah,
and he was good in the bullpen in 07, and he was lights out in the bullpen in 08, and just based on that production right there, we won the crap out of that trade. It just makes me wonder what exactly Ed Wade is doing with that team, and I just don't know what the ownership is waiting for there, because there's no plan and there's no plan in place here. And I mean, if they were smart, they'd see if they could. You know, I would probably hang on to Berkman just to say, hey, he's our franchise guy or whatever. But Oswalt could probably net a pretty decent return at the deadline for him.
Yeah, and they could. I mean, I'm no expert on trading mentality, but they could also probably trade Rodriguez.
Who?
Wandy Rodriguez.
Oh, Wandy. Oh, I wouldn't trade Wandy quite yet. But I thought you meant Pudge. I was like, no, Pudge isn't with the Astros anymore, Greg. He's with Washington.
Yes, I know.
But yeah, they could probably get some value out of Wandy. But I mean, he's 30 now, and he's either 29 or 30. Point is, he's getting to that age of. He's finally coming into his own a little bit here, but I don't know. I just don't see it being a beneficial thing for them to necessarily hang on to them.
Well, the thing with them is there's just nobody else that they can use. I mean,
yeah. Well, that's not entirely true. There's like Braden Looper's out there still.
No. I meant using a trade. You know,
as I said,
you know, you can look at other bad teams or, you know, a bad team, just a hypothetical bad team, and say, oh, well, they're going to have some prospects up and coming that are going to fix that. Houston's consistently ranked in the bottom five farm systems in baseball, and now they're in the bottom five MLB teams in baseball, too. If they want to keep themselves afloat without having to go through 5 years of good draft picks, then they're going to need to do some trading.
And they just kind of need to go into fire sale mode here. I really can't see a better option for him. I mean, Berkman is out. You got to give him the benefit of the doubt there by saying Berkman is out. But when stacked up against the Cardinals and the Brewers, I just don't see the Astros beating Cincinnati this year.
Well, Cincinnati's a better team, I think. So
they are a better team. I mean, they've made some interesting choices there. But even if there's no lights out amazing players in the team that aren't named Joey Votto, the Reds are a good squad. They're young still. Like, I mean, Joey Votto's pretty young still. I mean, young-ish anyways. And we're still kind of waiting to see who's their right fielder. I can't think of his name all of a sudden.
Jay Bruce,
yeah. I mean, Bruce has still got a lot of ups. He came up very young. It's the funny thing about Jay Bruce, his first major league game, he got the start in either center or right. I can't remember which. I think it was center because Griffey was still with the squad. And Griffey being the fun-loving, hilarious guy that that everyone knows and loves. His first game, you know, the team will come, you know, and here, welcome, you know, your Cincinnati Reds, and the team comes out on the field and all, you know, starts throwing the ball around.
Yep.
Everyone started running out, except it was only Jay Bruce running out, and the rest of the team stayed right at the steps, and Bruce ran out by himself, and everyone laughed at him, and then the rest of the team came out behind him.
Clever.
Yes, I'm a fan.
All right, so yeah, back to the Rockies. Let's see. Defense is still a concern. I made a joke, on one of the comment sections the other day, I kind of rubbed it in everyone's face where I was like, yeah, I knew 3 weeks ago that defense was still going to be an issue. Obviously, it was just as likely I could have been wrong. But point being, there's clearly a descent of defensive quality with the team. Most of the pieces who, you know, were incredibly defensively strong over the past few years are still with the team.
Yeah.
So it's not like they're not capable of returning to form, but
yeah, on paper, this is still one of the better defensive squads in the National League. I mean, Iannetta is good defensively around, and Olivo's, I mean, he's pretty bad at blocking balls in the dirt still, which we were warned by this, by, you know, scouting reports.
At least
and
he's got the arm.
He's got the arm, and he's made it clear he's going to work on it, but, you know, that, you know, lip service can only go so far.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope he does better for our sake and for his sake, and I like to win games. But, Helton, obviously, first base, you can't, there's not really too many questions about that. Barmas at second, Tulo at short, Stewart at third. That's a good defensive infield right there, at least on paper. But I mean, just looking at that Morales-blown save the other night, Tulo booting the ball, and Iannetta airmailing the one into center field.
Yep.
It's the kind of thing that they just seem to be the mistakes and the hiccups just seem to be rearing their ugly heads at the wrong moments.
Yeah, it makes you wonder if it's some sort of mental, you know, thing. If when the pressure's on, they start freaking out, or they stop paying attention to something, or their mind's off in La La Land somewhere.
Well, my initial reaction is it's like the ultimate, you know, clean slate in a sense, or the ultimate excuse to brush everything under the rug, is you can still say it's a young-ish squad still. Yes, Barmas is 30 or 31, and Helton's, you know, what, 80, and Iannetta's 27 now, but, I mean, Tulo's 25, Stewart's 24, the outfield is very young, even at least when they're all, you know, Gonzalez and Fowler are both under 25, Smith is, like, 28 now, and Hopps, obviously, I think he's a 30 right there, but, you know, I guess when I say young, I just mean as far as a young, I don't even know, it's an excuse. How long do you think, I don't even know how long I can keep saying this is a young squad, because it's an excuse that we can't keep making very much longer here, and I think this is kind of the, I don't want to say do or die, because we've done nothing but do, but as far as these just constant miscues here, something's got to give.
Well, in terms of our starting position players, the only one who's anywhere close to leaving really is Hop. Everyone
yeah.
else is, I mean, we're going to see a few years here where just about, you know, at least 7 or 8 of our position players from the previous season are going to be returning the next year. So they're all going to kind of grow up. So I guess by a few years from now, we're definitely not going to be able to use that excuse. But for now, we definitely do have a pretty young set of players, especially since, you know, three of them being Fowler, Stewart, and Gonzalez are all.
Another way to look at the young thing, too, is just by the roles that they're playing that they weren't playing before. For example, Hamill, he's not, you know, 23, obviously. He's, I think, 27 this year, maybe 28. I'm not exactly sure. I don't have the numbers up in front of me. But the point is his second, first full season where he's like, I am in the rotation. That's how it is. And at least to start the season, obviously. A lot of guys are having to adapt to the fact that, hey, wow, I'm a starter now. I'm really going to be doing this, and that's going to provide kind of the, you know, a youthful sense in the way of I'm adjusting to this role of I'm not fighting for a job anymore.
The same is kind of true with De La Rosa. I mean, he was never fighting for a job, but now he's got expectations.
I think De La Rosa is going to meet them still. And we want to go and freak out about De La Rosa's second start because, you know, 5 walks, 5 strikeouts, and, you know, was it 5 or 6 earned runs?
I don't know.
Whatever it was an ugly line. It was not a pretty line. And after his first start, you know, 9 strikeouts and 1 walk and 1 hit, we kind of have our expectations up in the clouds after that. And then he comes back and has a pretty poor start. This is what I talked about in my article on Wednesday, is that it was De La Rosa. The big difference we're going to see in him is there's still going to be kind of a good Jorge, bad Jorge thing, but it's going to be much, much more abbreviated and much more subdued than it was in the past, because, you know, back the whole bad Jorge thing was, you know, 6 walks, 2 strikeouts, 3 innings pitched, and 6 earned runs, whereas this time he still went 6, even after putting up a pretty poor line. And this is exactly what I'm anticipating and seeing him for the rest of the season, is when he has a bad start, he still makes it somewhat productive in the sense that he doesn't make the entire bullpen come out and all have an inning or whatever.
Which is what happened yesterday with Jason Hamill.
Yeah, Hamill has me a little concerned. Granted, we're only 2 starts in, and Hamill has trouble with Atlanta for some reason, and it's very small sample size. But remember last year, this is what prompted me to write the article on TRA, is the fact that he had one inning where I think it was a Barmas misplay that kept the inning alive, and then the inning just kept going, and it just would not end. And it's not all runs are as unearned as other unearned runs, and that's kind of the issue there. If you can't get out of it, you can't get out of it. And I think, I was very, very bullish on Hamill this offseason, and it's only two starts in, and I'm not throwing that out the window at all. I just, once we get out of April, I'm sure hope that he can twirl a couple, maybe not, like De La Rosa's first start, super gems, but I'm hoping he can put a few quality starts in there before we really need to start thinking.
I'm looking at our ERA in comparison to others, and we're actually doing pretty well. We're 13th with 3.97.
Mm-hmm.
Below 4 is not too bad. Speaking of that, the bullpen's really come around the past few days.
Mm-hmm. They've done a very good job of being able to limit damage and keep at least. I mean, when you have a 7-run differential to go into this third inning, there's not much the bullpen's going to do, except for, 2 runs over, 6 innings from your bullpen. I'll take that any day of the week and twice on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, assuming we have the doubleheader on Sunday. But, you're absolutely right. The bullpen is starting to step up a little bit, and it's just good to see. I mean, Morales has been better than most people have expected, and I don't think that he's going to be lights out still. But he is allowing that one run on the 2 defensive misplays and that walk-off win there. The fact that only 1 run crossed, that says a lot to me right there. Because think about Morales last year and have 1 run come across. Do you think that would have been the end of it? Or after 2 misplays, do you think that would have been the end of it? I certainly don't. And the fact that they got out of that, without any more damage, without him coming apart, without him losing his mind, I think that says a lot about him, because it was a very tight game, very tight role, and his defense did not bail him out, and he didn't lose it.
Right, and he actually kind of responded similarly a couple times when he was in the closer's role last year. I think he seems to flourish in it a little bit. He doesn't always respond well to pressure, but, and I mean, I'm saying there's still certainly room for him to improve, but at the same time, looking at his early days in the bullpen when he was first converted to that role, in terms of where he's come to now, there's definitely an improvement.
Yeah, and I talked to Renk earlier this season about Morales, and I said, do you think he's our 7th rotation starter? And Renk said, no, everyone here sees him as a reliever right now. And he said, long term, he goes, if he's not closing within a year or two here, he might look at starting again. But this is what I was saying during the offseason, too. I just think that he's basically burned the starting pitcher bridge. And this is very short term that I'm making this statement based on, but I just don't see him coming back and being a starter, because he's got nasty stuff, but over the course of a season, walks are going to kill him, and I don't think he has the longevity to be able to make up for that.
Well, and as I've said before, I've always liked the idea of Morales in the pen more, and as I keep saying, we have so much young starting pitching depth, there's really no room or reason to have to move him back. If we needed a lefty in the rotation, now we have Greg Smith and we have Christian Friedrich on his way. I don't really think we need any more left-handed starting pitching people right now. And, I mean, if we had him there, then fine. I'm not saying it's bad to have 3, but there's also no reason to say, well, we really need an extra one. Let's pull him out of the bullpen role again.
It would have to be emergency for me. I would rather start just about anyone than Morales right now.
Yeah, I would too.
Because he seems to have, like you just said, he seems to be flourishing, at least in a minor sense in that role. He seems to have somewhat adjusted to the thought of, I am going to be a relief pitcher this season. It is time for me to go out and do my best. If they say, oh, hey, we want to start stretching you out, I think I'm just going to wreck him.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't seem like the kind of guy who's got the mental fortitude to, and again, this is just based on watching him play. I don't know the guy, obviously, and I haven't read anything that says, well, Morales doesn't have the mental fortitude, but he seems to be the young pitcher who needs direction, and I think this is exactly what we need to be doing with him right now, is what we're doing, is keep him in one role.
I also want to point out one thing that I noticed in spring statistically, because that has continued into the regular season, and it's very, very encouraging for me. The Rockies are 29th. In home runs allowed, with 7.
Yeah. Yeah, we are... in the bad way or the good way?
In the good way.
In the good way, yeah. That is one thing that is just disturbingly good about this team is... And I got to give credit to Apodaca. got to make sure you either have a good, you have a strong sinker, or if you don't throw a sinker, you know, as a real pitch, and it doesn't seem like the kind of thing that you can, you know, just adapt your two-seamer to be more of a sinker, make sure you have solid command of a changeup. And we know that, that is an organizational philosophy, is that all your pitchers need to have strong command of a changeup, because you've got to keep the ball low in Coors Field. And if you can keep throwing a good changeup like that, there's a distinct chance that it will pay off and the ball will stay in the park. And which is kind of ironic, because Greg Smith, when he was coming up in Arizona system and then in Oakland system, and I guess he started the next season in Oakland, but he was ranked as having the best changeup in Arizona system, and which is funny because it kind of adds to the whole Greg Smith and Jeff Francis are interchangeable parts thing, because Francis had one of the best changeups in Major League Baseball. And if Smith can keep that changeup working the way, you know, it is, I think it's going to help him limit the amount of damage that's going to come from his home run allowance. And this is, again, why the irony is there, because he's probably our most home run prone pitcher. It's either him or Hamill. Dale LaRosa's done.
Smith, I would say it's Smith simply because he's more of a fly ball pitcher. Hamill's kind of somewhere in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have, of course, Jimenez and De La Rosa never really profiled as quote-unquote ground ball pitchers. You know, they profile as power pitchers. Yet, coming into the organization, they've both learned how to use that as a tool, which is very nice.
And not even just the ground balling, but Jimenez has had very good home run control his entire career. I mean, you go to check out his minor league numbers, very good home run control. And then in the majors, 0.5 home runs per nine. I mean, maybe 0.6, somewhere in that range right there, 0.5 to 0.6. And, I mean, you can kind of throw out 07 because, you know, half-season rookie starts. When I say throw it out, I don't mean completely throw it out, but the last two seasons when he's thrown, you know, a good solid inning load and he's allowed, you know, virtually no home runs there, I think we can kind of stand on that and say that Ubaldo Jimenez has very, very good home run control. And a lot of that comes because of the wicked movement he gets on his fastball. I mean, you always hear about how the break, you know, the hanging curve or the slider that catches too much plate gets belted for the home run, but how many guys are just like Clint Barmas or most Major League Baseball hitters and sitting dead red on a fastball? Ubaldo's fastball moves a foot. You're not going to get the kind of contact you wish you got on it.
Yeah, basically, his stuff is not hittable for a home run by default. If it gets hit for a home run, he messed up somewhere.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, and sometimes even good pitches are hit for home runs, but I don't know. Ubaldo is just—I mean, he's just otherworldly good as far as his skill sets go. And a lot of it with Jimenez is just going to be—you know—he's learning still. He is almost there, and I don't think he's ever going to crack the Tim Lincecum threshold or anything like that. I'm not being, you know, that insane here, but he's a top-flight pitcher. And once he can get his head around the fact that he's a top-flight pitcher, learns to trust all his stuff. I mean, the guy is just good. Just good.
Now, of course, I've only been, you know, I haven't been following the team through its entire existence this closely, but I have to assume from everything I know about it from before that he's pretty much the best starting pitcher to ever be on the team.
Oh, without a doubt.
In terms of sheer talent, yeah.
The closest you could probably even think about bringing up would be someone like Pedro Astacio. And Astacio was a strikeout machine and an absurd workhorse, and you could maybe cite that as a, you know, management's utilization of him, or you could cite it as, just whatever. But, I mean, the guy wasn't the best at keeping the ball in the park, you know, and a grand part of that is because he was pitching in, you know, late 90s Coors, but Astacio is probably one of the better ones we've seen there. And Jimenez is just, I don't think he'll ever have the sheer strikeout total that Pedro Astacio did, but just considering how the guy has improved every year, the sky's the limit for him as far as the annals of Rockies history.
So let's talk about Bing for a little bit. We haven't really had a lot of success there recently, and we're starting to get a couple people, including Troy Rank. I believe he wrote that article. I have it up right now. Let me check. But there's no. Oh, it is. That is. People are starting to call attention to the fact that there's a lot of. Basically, we're getting gunned down a lot at second base. Spielborgs had that happen to him the other day. I guess it was just yesterday. And so, you know, I don't. We haven't been sending people a ton. It was actually less when we looked it up earlier than I expected. I think it was like 9 attempts, right?
We had, 9 attempts, 3 stolen bases, 6 caught.
Right. So, I mean, it's definitely not a good ratio, but at the same time, it kind of was an illusion in the sense that it almost seemed like we had more than 6 thrown out. It's still not where we want to be, especially since we do have base runners who should be in a positive stolen base rate, specifically Fowler and Gonzalez, I think. And, I mean, Tulowitzki can do it, too. So, you know, it, unlike the defense, it's not really causing me, you know, cold sweats or anything like that.
No.
But at the same time, I think people are starting to notice that it's or at least they're starting to suggest that maybe we're being a little too aggressive when we shouldn't be. What do you think?
Well, it depends on who it is. With Gonzalez, you saw his numbers last season. He's not going to be a 50 stolen base guy. He's not going to be a 40 stolen base guy, and I think 30 is on a bit of a bullish prediction as well. And the thing is that he is fast, but he doesn't have the lights-out speed burner, I'm just going to straight-up outrun you speed. He's got the smart speed, because if you look at last year, he got caught like 3 times, I think. Just like 17-3, I think, was the ratio.
Right.
He has to know how to pick his spots better. Once he picks his spots, I mean, he's fast enough to be able to make up for a small misread. But, I mean, he's got to be stealing off pitchers. Same with Tulowitzki. Fowler, I think it's a confidence issue. I think it's something he has to work on with Hill, and I think Coach Glenn Allen Hill, I should say. And I think Fowler has the straight-up speed to be able to outrun guys. He can steal off the pitcher and the catcher because he's just that fast.
He also hasn't been getting on base enough to really steal yet.
No, that's the big issue right there, is Fowler not getting on base.
Well, to be fair to him, and I mean, we can talk all we want about how he should not be a switch hitter and so on and so on, but at the same time, he's not going to get a lot of chances batting second.
No.
It always comes back to that. He should not be batting second. I don't care if he's comfortable there. Move him to leadoff, please.
And this is, I mean, I might have said this last week, too, but or maybe I was just talking to someone else about it, but God forbid someone goes down with injury. I'm not actually saying I wish someone would get hurt, but if Eric Young could pick his game up in the springs and merits himself the call-up, I don't think Jim Tracy is progressive enough to do something like this, even though it's, you know, been done throughout baseball history, but bat Eric Young ninth. Not because of the fact that I hate Eric Young or whatever, but then move Dex to the leadoff, because he'll only have really one at-bat as a leadoff hitter. And then
he'll be hitting behind Eric Young again.
Behind
just like
Eric
he
Young.
Was, yeah.
Back in Double-A in Modesto, back when the two of them, you know, combined for like 100 stolen bases or something like that. I mean, the two of them on base together, I mean, you thought Kaz and Willie Taveras is good? Eric Young and Dexter Fowler are going to, I mean, it'll come to that, probably even surpass it. This is going to be the speed on the base passing that we all dream about.
Only question would be, where would Eric Young be playing?
I'm assuming that they somehow do a platoon with Barmas at second base or something like that. Or even on days, I mean, if for some reason Mora gets hurt, and you'll have to kind of do an infield merry-go-round, with Tulowitzki obviously being the primary shortstop, and everybody still be in their primary positions. But then when Barmas needs a break, you can play Eric Young. When Stewart needs a break, you can move Barmas to third and play Eric Young at second. I don't really know if I trust Eric Young at third.
Or move Fowler to left and put Eric Young in center. How's that sound?
No, that's a terrible idea. That's a terrible idea.
I was just kidding, obviously.
Yeah, I know you were. That's a terrible idea. Don't ever say that.
Okay.
We'll
put Mora there instead.
Yes, please put Mora there instead. Mora is versatile. That's one misnomer that I kind of hate. That young and fast does not mean center fielder.
It doesn't mean outfielder. He's not an outfielder at all.
He's not an outfielder. It depends on who you're looking at. You're like Sean Smith, the guy who does the Chone projections that I've been writing about the last couple weeks. He uses total zone going through the minor leagues, and his estimation of it is that Eric Young is a average to slightly positive second baseman. I'm okay with that.
Well, you know, I'm beginning to wonder if maybe it's not just that he's young and fast that's making people, you know, think he kind of profiles as an outfielder, but also that his father was an outfielder as well as a second baseman.
But Eric Young Sr. played left field, though.
Right, that's true. But, I mean, I don't think even Eric Young Jr. can play or should be playing left field.
No, I agree completely. When I see Eric Young, whenever I hear Eric Young in the outfield, I always remember the same game, the same play. Young in center, Gonzalez in left, and I'm not sure if it was Hop or Spielberg's in right. It doesn't matter. It didn't make any difference.
Was this in spring or was it last season?
Oh, this is last season when they brought Eric Young up in September. But it was a fly ball to the gap in left field, and both Gonzalez and Eric Young were chasing for it, and Young dives, completely misses it. However, the thing is, Gonzalez got it standing up in front of him. Gonzalez is like, whoa, you just dived? Okay, I got the ball. Don't worry about it, big guy.
He's just showing off.
And God bless him for having that much effort, because not a lot of guys are going to lay out for a ball that they can't. They think that that's the best chance of getting it. And, you know, good work on Young for at least putting the effort out there. But effort is not always the best thing. effort will get you halfway there, but halfway there is not a Major League Baseball player.
I'm perusing the Sky Sox stats, looking to see if he's been playing in the outfield at all, but I can't find them. All right, the minor league stats aren't complex enough here. I mean, I'm sure if I go to Baseball Reference or something, it'll show up.
Maybe you keep talking, and I'll look it up.
Okay, well, I don't have much else to say. I can talk about the Colorado Springs Sky Sox stats we have up. We can talk about Eric Young, who's been struggling at the plate.
You could talk about that. What do you think about that?
Well, he had kind of a weird spring. He started off looking kind of like he is right now, and then he kind of improved. I spent a lot of time just staring and analyzing a lot of the spring stats across the league, just because in spring they're kind of weird, and they don't really mean anything in terms of, you know, predicting important games during the season, but it's still interesting to see, you know, what people have been accomplishing. And Eric Young was always weird because he was hitting, you know, 215 basically the entire spring, and yet he was in the top 50 in the league in extra base hits somehow. Which is especially funny considering a lot of people profile Eric Young as a singles hitter. It basically meant that during the spring, every hit he hit was an extra base hit.
With a guy as fast as Eric Young Jr., that's how he's going to get his slugging percentage up, is by taking the extra base on a slightly deep single.
Right.
If anyone on the team can do it, it's Eric Young. The guy is lightning quick. Fowler's fast because you don't realize how fast he's moving because he's so tall and lanky. But I was at a game with a couple of our users on Sunday, and we watched Fowler. He ran at a double. Or no, it was that triple he had. It was a triple. But you could see the footprints of where he rounded, and they're seriously 6 feet apart. The guy has this long, loping stride, and it's perfect for the outfield. And it blows my mind about how he's able to, you know, move so fast and cover so much ground with seemingly no effort.
So as of this recording, Eric Young is hitting, or has hit 3 for 29, and is hitting .103.
Yeah, he has 3 hits and 3 walks. 1 double. He's also played 7 games at second base. 968 fielding percentage, for whatever that means, I guess. I don't have anything more advanced on Baseball Reference here.
He has one error.
One error. And then he played one. He made a slight appearance in left field this season, but he had no chances, and nothing came his way. And it was probably just part of a double switch.
Okay, so that's good that they're basically keeping him at second for now.
I don't mind the idea of Eric Young is physically able to play left or right if we have to make a bizarre double switch. In the same sense that I don't mind Melvin Moore playing left or right if we have to make a bizarre double switch. And I swear, if he plays center field in a bizarre double switch, our bench had better be depleted. I would rather play any of our outfielders except for Brad Hopp in center field than Melvin Moore. I would rather play Clint Barmas in center field than Melvin Mora.
I would rather move Barmas to center and put Mora at second.
And I would rather... I'm not trying to just rage at Mora here because he's older. He's 38. He just doesn't... This is more my frustration with the misconception of his own skill set. He's older now. We got him into backup Stewart to be the super uber utility guy. At least in my estimation, that's what we should have been getting him for.
And that's kind of what I was about to say, because basically the reason we got him, or the reason we were targeting him at first, was because we needed a corner infielder. Yet they knew that by signing Giambi, you know, they were basically not going to be getting, or there was going to be no room for a full utility player. So they were basically like, yeah, we'll just stick that label on Mora, and that'll be good enough, right?
Yeah, deep down, and I know it's way too late and it's, you know, kind of spilled milk, but I kind of wish we'd gotten back Jamie Carroll. Not because I think that the guy's phenomenal. I didn't think he was that. In 2007, he was batting like 195 or something. He was below the Mendoza line. It just made me so angry. But the guy can defend shortstop, second, third, and I would rather not put him at first because he's like 5'7". But Carroll would have been a better infield addition than Melvin Mora because he's an infielder by trade.
Well, we're already over time, but I just want to share one cool thing that I see on the stats here. Matt Reynolds pitched 5.1 innings so far, 8 strikeouts.
8?
Yep.
That's very promising.
Yes, it is.
I've heard a lot about how Reynolds is the, you know, kind of the next in line to be making the not next in line, but he is one of our top considerations for guys to make the bullpen, should injury or just complete lack of performance come along.
Yes, absolutely. If something happens to Flores, Beimel, or Morales, and we feel like we need another lefty, he's probably first in line right now. We also have Jimmy Gobble, who's recovered from his injury and is now at AAA pitching. He's only pitched .1 of an inning, though, so far.
What do you do? Is there any line on it? Any strikeouts, anything?
Let's see, one game, 0.1 inning. No, everything else is zeros. So
they probably just a pop out or a ground out
or something. Yeah.
He got an out. I'm guessing he faced a left hander too.
Yeah, I don't know the details. I think they mentioned in the. Well, I can check that real quick for our last step here on the Pebble report today. They mentioned his outing.
Looking at it, if Jimmy Gobble makes the team, either he suddenly resurrected his career, or everybody's hurt.
All it says is Jimmy Gobble made his season debut by recording the hell out of the seventh inning.
Oh, well, there you go.
I don't mind Gobble as an injury backup for a left-hander. He'd only be here like 2 weeks, hopefully, at the longest. So
I guess the way I see it is that with the number of – I'd rather see Matt Reynolds in the majors than him. I'd rather see we have so much young pitching that's at least on the 40-man that I would rather see than Jimmy Gobble.
Well, we don't have a lot of lefties on the 40-man, unfortunately. In fact, I don't think we have any lefty relievers other than ones who are on the team, of course.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I'm still a fan of it's overrated, but like you said, if it's a two-week stint, I think Jim Tracy can go without all his toys. I'm hoping they don't bring up an inferior pitcher purely based on handedness.
Yeah, let's say that Beimel and Flores both got hurt, then I think it would be okay to call up a lefty for his handedness.
These are all contingencies. You're right. I'm not, if our lefties are all hurt and Morales is still needed as a closer specifically, sure, bring whoever up you need to bring up. I'm not going to completely throw a fit, but I'm just more concerned because Jim Tracy likes to use his lefties in tougher situations.
Well, I guess at this point, the good news is Matt Reynolds would deserve a call-up if he got there. We're already approaching the point last year where Matt Daly had to get called up. He had pitched like 8 innings or something like that in relief, and yet, I mean, you know, they needed to call somebody up, so even with just those 8 innings of really good baseball, he got the call. So if something were to happen, you know, that's even just on, you know, a few innings, Matt Reynolds could get consideration. He and Juan Rincon have been really good.
Juan Rincon.
Actually, Juan Rincon looks like he's actually been a little bit of an escape artist. He is closing down there, by the way, which I think is really funny. I'd rather have somebody else closing than Rincon, maybe Escalona or somebody.
You're not alone. I guarantee you're not alone. But, I mean, I don't know. I mean, if this is the role he's... Remember, it's AAA, too. I mean, Ryan Spier closed in AAA, and Ryan Spier was not that good of a pitcher. I loved Ryan Spier, so don't think that it's just a bad-nothing Ryan Spier moment, but AAA closer doesn't necessarily mean anything for the big club. It just means, hey, he pitched relief.
All right, well, I think that about wraps it up. We're at 45 minutes already.
Yeah, everyone's listening to us for 15 minutes extra.
Well, at least it's not an hour like last week. So,
well, last week we had a two-week thing. So next week, and give us topics to talk about, because we are talking about what we figure is interesting to us. So if you want to hear more things about more players or more concepts, or just like to hear us ranting about other teams more, or whatever, let us know.
Yeah, as
we
always,
will talk about it.
Leave a comment or send an email or something if you have a question or something you want us to address, and we'll definitely accommodate. So on behalf of Andrew and myself, we'll see you next week. Take care.